What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray. We're talking about generational wealth. We're talking about finance. We're talking about business. And we always talk about mental health.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate.
And before we introduce our guest today, before we introduce my brother Eric today with the Black Men Sunday Spotlight, I just want to tell everybody, please go to the doctor. A lot of men do not want to go to the doctor. I went to the doctor. I got my colonoscopy done. And when it took a while to get the results back. And that was probably the scariest 4 days of my life. But luckily, I'm with Orlando Health. And they sent the results back before the doctors even have it. So, guys, please go to the doctor. Health is wealth. The money doesn't mean anything if your health isn't right. I got my blood work done too. So, guys, please go to the doctor. We're trying to live, right? You have kids, right? We're trying to live. Stop being scared of going to the doctor, you know. And I want to say rest in peace to Coach Mickey Clayton from FAMU. He's been on the show 3 times. He passed away unexpectedly. Many blessings to him and his family. And it just was ironic that the day he passes away, I go to the doctor the next day. So let's go on and get it started. Eric Pelayer, who do you have for our Black Men Sunday spotlight? My brother coming out of Huntsville,
That's right.
Alabama. Let's go.
Let's go. Hey, man, this guy, man, this spotlight I have, I'm surprised he's not in the history books because he has done so many things that we use on a daily basis. But let me get right to it. The next time you're at a barbershop, I want you to thank this guy. His name is Richard Spikes. Now, this black inventor not just cut hair, but revolutionized the way we live. Born in 1878, son of a barber. He learned to cut hair in his father's barber shop. But Spikes saw problems everywhere and tried to fix them. In 1908, he is running a saloon in Arizona, and he saw it was a problem getting beer out of a keg. So guess what? He invented the modern beer tap. So Milwaukee Brewing Company bought his patent, and we're using his invention today. So every time you go to a bar, every keg party, that's Richard Spikes again. In 1913, he put in the first turn signal on a car. And in 1932, he improved automatic gear shift. But here's what's amazing. At age 72, he patented the horizontal swinging barber chair. You know, the one that swivels so the barber can move around and cut your hair so easily. In 1962, at the age of 84, while he was nearly blind with glaucoma, he invented the automatic brake system that is used in school buses today. Now, from the beer taps, turn signals for the car, and the barber chair that swivels, one man's invention touched every part of daily life. Now, barbershops aren't just about haircuts, they're about innovation, community, and black genius. Man, just give it up to this genius here, Mr. Richard Spikes. That's my spotlight for today.
Wow, man, you came out to get tired. Okay, that's what we're talking about, man. Fresh out of
Absolutely.
Huntsville, Vegas, my brother Eric. Thank
Yes,
you for that
sir.
spotlight. And like I said, man, brothers, go to the doctor, please.
Go to the
That's
doctor.
right. So anyway, let's go and introduce today's guest. I'm excited to have this brother on. You know, I feel like Black Men Sundays and Bank of America just sounds beautiful together. But let me run down this brother's resume. This brother's a banking executive with over 20 years of financial service experience. This brother has an MBA from UCF College of Business. He's a senior VP and market executive of Bank of America. So without further ado, Juan Amo, my brother, welcome to Black Men Sundays. How you doing today?
Corey, thank you for the introduction. Happy to be here. I'm going to take you everywhere. You make me sound a lot more important than I am.
Oh no, you're very important. I looked at your resume. I looked at your LinkedIn. I said, okay, I need to make sure I'm correct today. So without further ado, I just want to jump right into it. You know, when we're talking about our show is about generational wealth, finance, and business. It's a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of CEOs listen to the show. So I just want to jump right in. So right now, what trends are you currently seeing among business owners in the Central Florida area?
So if you take it from the top, right on the state, and the state of Florida has always been business friendly, experiencing tremendous growth. When you look at Central Florida by itself, we're experiencing the same. We're actually, I will argue with a lot of people, we're actually one of the fastest growing regions within the state of Florida, all the way to 2024, even 2025. With that being said, when you look at what the volatility, everything that's going around our markets, we're very well positioned to continue to take advantage of this. And what I mean by that, when you look at a Central Florida compared to one of the biggest major cities, the business community is closer, it's tighter, it's more friendly, it's easier to actually build relationships, right? And with that being said, it's easier to navigate the waters. So rapid growth is what I say is at the top of my mind, Corey, and it's how you actually navigating that to the business community and your business partners, right? And when I say it about business partners, I always tell business owners, especially entrepreneurs, you need a strong accountant, you need a strong corporate attorney, and you need a strong banker to help you to navigate the waters, give you enough information. So from the top of the house, I will say that's the biggest strength. Not a surprise, but it's something that we really need to pay attention and capitalize on it.
Great information. And, like I said, you're the Senior Vice President and Market Executive of Bank of America. So, what are some resources that Bank of America has that local business owners in the area may not be aware of?
It's interesting because when people look at organizations like us, they think they're just going to be a number, Corey, right? They think, hey, the bank is too big. I'm just going to be a number. Am I going to get the service and advice that I need? And I will argue that that's where we shine on, right? We expend a lot of resources and technology and products and services with the hope that talent comes to deliver that for their clients. So that being said, I will say your local relationship manager. So we have a business model where you have, think about it like your quarterback. So that's your relationship manager is out there to get to understand your business, right? As much as we can be extremely inquisitive. And from there, bring all that information, understand your strengths and needs, and assemble a team around you. So the ability to navigate the organization and also source data from the bank, right? All the data that we have from research and then share that accordingly to help you rationalize and make decisions according to what's happening in the market. That's one. When you combine all that, Corey, with the comprehensive platforms that the bank has, it's just unparalleled. And you have the same amount of data and technology that I provide to a company that could be after an IPO, it could be a small business. It's the same information. It's available to everybody. It's available to every relationship manager there to deliver for their clients. So think about being proactive, being the idea banker instead of being the concierge banker. And I'm going to slow down there and repeat that. Being the idea banker instead of being the concierge banker. The idea banker is reaching out to you, say, hey, based on what's happening in the market or rates or commodities volatility, I thought about you. I just had a conversation with a client in another industry, but it's exposed to the same risk that you are. Here's how we're mitigating the risk for them. Let's talk. Is this something that is of interest to you? I think, Corey, you will take that call every day, right? So when we're working together in that way, right, as close with business owners, it's just unparalleled. Now, we take that to another level. So you ask about the resources internally. The relationship managers are also really good at knowing who the business community is. What I mean by that is we want to be an extension, not only internally with the financial institution, but also outside the bank, right? Who is a good CPA? Who is a good insurance broker? I need a new CFO. I need a new controller. I need a great corporate attorney. I need somebody to help me with patents. That's not what we do, but we're here to help. So a lot to be said in regards to all this associated and how do we navigate the bank? How do we do that with a local delivery model? And it starts with that relationship manager that is assigned to your account.
Great information. I appreciate that. And what I want to ask you now is when we're have a lot of new entrepreneurs that have, their business may be under a year old, what advice or what type of opportunities does Bank of America offer for a new business owner, a new small business owner, a new entrepreneur that, like I said, they're like a year and under?
Yeah, so we have a couple different products available, and depending on the industry, right? If you're in the healthcare industry, We have actually ability to fund startups. And even if you're still in the startup mode, less than a year or less than $1 million a year of annual revenues, we still have products tailored to you. Franchising is one top of mind for us that we do extremely well. Dentists, veterinarians, and physicians is another one we do extremely well. We have preferential status with the Small Business Administration based on our volume, right? And then so in regards to that, we have a good amount of tailored products associated with it. And what we did is also assign business development officers to markets just to deliver that in a very efficient way to our clients. Again, using your relationship manager. But if I have to look back, you know, probably I want to go a little deeper in your question because it's probably a question that a lot of your audience is actually paying close attention. What you should be doing right now, right? In regards to the local resources your organization has, that's one thing. But what are the things that you should be doing now? So cyclicality is one thing. The fall actually marks a key transition point for a lot of entrepreneurs, especially looking at the year-end performance. It's a crucial time for a lot of the business owners, and it's when they need to spend a lot of time and preparing for their finances and capitalize on upcoming opportunities and new cycles engagements. I tell people, when you start, you wear all the hats, right? But you also have to take an inventory of your human capital. What I mean by that, you may have one or two employees or maybe 10 employees. Are you hiring for where you're going, though, for where you are, right? And that's a big differentiator. Are you hiring to take back your time? And what I mean by that, Corey, is are you hiring people to do some of the tasks that you used to do when you started the business? And maybe you didn't enjoy, right? But are you hiring for people to do that even better or do it close enough the way you like it, but that they enjoy it and they take that away from you so you can really focus on the things you're good at? So some other businesses actually are a little slower in the winter, right? And if that is your case, especially during the holidays, when you actually go to a natural business slowdown, what are you doing to take advantage of that? So that's when you actually press the reset button, start analyzing the efficiencies of your business, what you're doing, what went well, what went wrong. Actually, a lot of people do this when the business is not doing well, Corey. And I challenge you to do this when the business is going well as well. What could you have done better? Right. And what I mean by that, it's basically some of the things that you need to consider. Do you have a strong understanding of your cash flow? Right. We know it. Cash is king. And you need to have a really close gauge of this. It's not how much money you have in your account. I'm talking about how you monitor the flow, right? From you cut a check to buy raw materials or inventory or hire people to the, you know, when you get money from one of your customers, the closest that cycle. So many ways to do this. Do you do a budget? This is something that should be mandatory. And it's not about predicting exactly what's going to happen. It's having a plan. Certain industries, especially here in Central Florida, there's a lot of tourism and hospitality. So there's cyclicality in between. So you need to have a good understanding of your business. It's hard when you start because you don't have data to go back, financial data, right? But if you have a year or two, right, you have that data that you can go back and analyze the peaks and valleys and actually create your own budget. So you can actually anticipate what's going to come from a cash flow perspective. And, you know, these conversations that need to have your bank and your CPA. How strong are your suppliers? How often do you negotiate with your suppliers? When you're starting the business, it's hard because you're starting to build that relationship, but these relationships are key. So the stronger these relationships are, then this is something, another tool you can use to optimize your cash flow. And what I mean by that is can you ask for extended payment terms or discounts for early payment? Or volume discounts. What are the thresholds that you need to achieve in order to obtain volume discounts? So if you cannot come into agreement on this, it's okay. You can shop around for better opportunities and transactions, which brings another point about negotiating with suppliers. Make sure you don't have a concentration of suppliers, right? When you're starting the business, it's hard because you're building relationships, but you always have to be thinking in the same way that you're looking for hiring people. Always keep like a file on it. You need to start thinking who other suppliers you can actually be working on. Minimizing the risk and exposure to one supplier is key. What happens if that supplier goes out of business? Well, actually, that account for them doesn't represent a lot of business, and then decided to cut it, right? So there's a risk associated with it. Think about your business cash flow and how you accelerate that. So look at a way that you can actually delay your payments and accelerate your receivables. By the way, your bank can do this analysis for you, looking at your historical financial statements. They can do a benchmarking analysis on this, Corey. A lot of people don't know this, but you can look at your industry and tell you, hey, based on this niche that you are in, you're actually collecting money 10 days behind the rest of people in your industry. Or you're actually collecting it faster. This is information that I would want to know if I were in your shoes, right? So the other aspect is, think about always having proactive conversations with your bank and also exploring financial options. People have the misconception, especially when they're early on, to look for financing when the biggest need arrives, right? And if you look at how banks analyze risk, if you think about it, like if you're driving a car, Corey, right? So, and your windshield is the money you want to support the needs that you have in the future. Your rearview mirror is how the bank analyzes that exposure. They look at the most recent historical financial data, and they're going to compare that annualized debt that you have through that windshield to your historical performance in your rearview mirror. That's basically a conservative way to analyze risk, right? So why I share that is because then you should be asking for support of your bank when you actually don't need the money, right? And you have it in place. Or maybe when you don't have the biggest needs, and then you start establishing a relationship. So when the need comes, not only you have a facility, but maybe if you need more, it's easier to work on an increase based on historical performance. The other aspect that I think you all should be doing, especially if you carry inventory, and you have a significant fall demand, basically make sure that you took a full analysis of physical inventory, and you need to adjust as needed. It's hard to do right now, especially with all the volatility that we're experiencing and the tariffs. But doing this, going back to this data and collecting this data so you can analyze it every year, optimization of inventory is the biggest failure that I see with business owners when they start, right? Because a lot of their cash actually ends up staying there in their warehouses. Sometimes they're like, hey, I just rather buy as much inventory as I can right now to secure the price, which is the case that's happening right now. But then you have money sitting there in that shelf. It's costing you money because maybe you use it a working capital facility and so forth. Sitting on your shelf, it's not moving consistently. You may have to actually later to deploy it at a discount. Optimization of your inventory is basically fundamental to for margins and optimizing cash flow. So make sure that if you don't have the data or resources to do this, think about at some point giving this task to somebody within your team. For example, implementing just-in-time inventory is a perfect scenario. Again, it's hard to do, but it's something you can always try to achieve this. So I know I said a lot, Corey. These are just some of the things top of mind that come to me when you ask that question.
Oh no, that's great information. Don't be shy. It's Black Men Sundays, man. And one thing that you mentioned before, you said you guys at Bank of America, you mentioned the healthcare industry. So if someone's in the healthcare industry listening and they're trying to get going, what benefits does Bank of America offer?
Basically, what we do through this business, we lend an enterprise value. What that means is we have enough data in the market, they know the demographics, your type of degree, where you want to open a location. We know by certainty and data, right? This is all driven by data, how successful you are going to be. So we kind of can run projections and tell you, hey, provide a surety of debt repayment. For example, Corey, you can come to me and say, hey, one of my brothers just graduated from dental school. They can come to Bank of America and actually pursue their dream of owning their own practice from the get-go. Why? Because it's something that we do extremely well, because again, we have a great history of repayment ability on the industry. So the best way to do that, if you don't have any connections within the institution, just walk into your local financial center, ask to meet with a relationship banker, walking through your degree, what you're trying to accomplish, and then they will guide you and help you navigate your organization. But that's just one of the many examples that we do when we have a stronger specialization. And again, I want to reference, Corey, the amount of data that we have as a global organization.
Definitely. Yeah, they'll definitely have to look that up. I appreciate that because you mentioned it earlier. I just wanted you to backtrack on that. Okay, cool. Well, I'm gonna open the stage up. Let some of my brothers talk to you, fellas. We're speaking to Juan Amo, Senior VP, Market Executive, Bank of America. Let's go. Say your name and city and state you're coming from and get your question off. Let's get it.
All right. Hey, this is Ray Simmons calling out of Rockledge, Florida. But one question I had was in regards to you spoke about tariffs earlier and the temperament, I guess, of the market. What does Bank of America offer in regards? And I'm thinking right now, say worst case scenario, what type of hardship options would you offer, or does the bank offer for its clients in regards to them getting, if they get underwater, you know, if the tariffs start to really hit hard, you know, inflation is, you know, going to start moving up as soon as we start initiating these cuts. That's inevitable. You know, that's just how the economy works. So, do you guys have anything set in place in regards to hardship for families, just so they have options and they're in the know in case they're ever in that scenario?
Hey, Ray, happy to answer your question and thank you for being here today. We don't have any specific product tailored to it, but what we can tell you is we have a great pulse on what's happening in the market, right? So when you look at and we take a poll of all the clients that are actually going through the same, we recognize that from a risk perspective, right? So going back to my initial assessment or recommendation that I made, knowing about a relationship manager who is your banker, having this proactive dialogue and conversations, the more you come to us and disclose where you are, what we want to hear is yes, this is something that is out of your control, right? You couldn't plan for this, right? And by the way, all of our clients are going through the same. And we acknowledge and recognize that. The next step is, hey, but here's what I've been doing, right? Here's what I've been doing to basically control as much as I can. However, it's still not enough. In that case, in a scenario, we look at your historical performance, have you navigated potentially in other economic cycles or not. If you haven't, is how can we help you to bridge that gap? So we actually do what we call a cash run, or burn, I like to call it, and how quickly you're going to burn through your cash before you actually going to run out of it. And that will give us an indication of how much money do you need to be reach that gap. From there is what you're willing to do in regards to minimize the risk for the bank if we're actually going to work with you and extend, right? So always think about it. We want to be advocates for our clients, but at the same time, we have to protect the bank, right? We're in the business of minimizing and managing risk. At the same time, we serve a purpose to small business owners, mid-size and large, making sure that we're providing enough information. What makes us comfortable? One thing is, yes, is looking at your performance. Two is how proactive you are with us providing information, and the sooner the better. Reacting is the hard part, right? So if you come to a bank and say, listen, in 30 days, I'm going to run out of money, right? That's hard, right? If you come and say, hey, if we're going in this track, the next 6 to 9 months are going to be tough for us. Here are a couple of things that I'm doing, and I'm hoping they're going to pay off, but I need support. That's different. So it's that type of approach that you need to have. You need to have it with your CPA, by the way, making sure they understand what's happening with you so they can provide proactive solutions. Work with your business community. There's a plethora of support out there from non-for-profit organizations, especially from the Entrepreneur Center. The National Entrepreneur Center, I'm a big fan. There's plenty of support there. Top of mind for me, you know, you have the African American Chamber of Commerce, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Prospera, which is an EDC designed to Hispanics owners. You also, there's BBBIF, like the Black Business Initiative Fund. They also not only provide advisory, they actually provide funding. So you have to look at all resources around your business community. They are designed for you, Ray, right? The main purpose is making sure that you not only increase and hire people, you also retain people employed, so and connecting the bank with all those resources, again, you're well-rounded, but you need to know who they are. And by the way, if you don't, that's okay. Your banker is supposed to know, right? And tell you, make introductions. I know I don't have any specific product, but I hope that answers your question, right?
Yes, Juan, I appreciate it, man. That was a thorough breakdown of that. So thank you. And I was taking notes as you were speaking as well. And because the reason I brought that question up is I work with this company as a contractor, and we go out to first responders and basically teach them financial education. Everything, like you were saying, from initiating the budget to sticking with that budget. We go over credit, credit repair, tons of stuff. And it's a lot of not just first responders, but it's a lot of people out there that are, kind of already struggling because, if their paycheck isn't keeping up with the rate of inflation, they're already behind, right? So thank you again for answering that question. I get that a lot, so I wanted to bring that up, for the listeners in case they were listening. So my second question, I got one more, and then I'll hand it over to Kalali or someone else on the line. So with the, and this is regarding digital currency, and if you can answer, fine. If not, that's okay too. But with the new legislation, stable coins and all these things, are that are coming, or there's literally in motion. They're trying to get these things going as fast as possible. But so my question is, how are you guys responding with the passing of that last bill with that act regarding digital currency? Are you guys trying to stay proactive, like ahead of the curve, or do you guys offer any type of guidance yet on digital currency assets? Because I know a lot of banks are starting to work with their clients with digital currency. Some bank, whereas banks didn't even allow it just a few years ago, it wasn't even a conversation. But it's inevitable. It seems like it's happening. There's a lot of major institutional players involved at this point. And what is, I guess, Bank of America, how are they prepping for this inevitable digital currency wave coming?
And I think you're referring more to crypto
Yeah,
in
sure.
general.
And stable coins as well. Yeah, it's
Yeah. So listen, from the top of the house, you have heard it before, probably. We love the technology behind it, which is the volatility and the risk of and a lack of regulation is what scares a lot of people, right? What I can tell you is we've been a digital organization for a long time and try to push people to a digitized world is what we are. If I look at our institution, I like to say that we are a technology company that happens to provide financial solutions. Why do I say that? We spend an average of $4 billion a year in technology, just in technology, right? That's massive. I can tell you that close to our associates worldwide, including the US and Europe, about 40%, close to 40% work somehow related in the technology sector of the bank. And now you see what I mean. Part of it is the risk associated with the exposure to people trying to get into our system, new products, new services, right? But more importantly, data. We're a data-driven organization, right? We have this
right.
massive amount of information. But at the same time, we try to get people who are digital world from the way they transact, minimizing checks, going to ACH, avoiding, real-time payments, which is replacing wire payments. We can outsource your entire accounts payable suite in your companies. If you go to Europe, you go to Canada, nobody writes a check, right? We're still writing checks here, which drives me crazy. The use of card, the use of, business owners, if you guys are listening, make sure you have a great commercial card program, right? Where you actually, you can float that for 55 days, no paying the interest. Right, and you get coins associated with it. That's basically what I can tell you, right? I can't comment much on what's happening on crypto. I'm not allowed to. And in all ways you
Understood.
say, because it's not my expertise, but I can tell you that we love the technology behind it. Blockchain is one of the things that we have many patents. And that's why I made all that reference on how much investment we're doing on the technology side.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just see, the more talk of assets becoming tokenized, to be put on the blockchain. It's a lot of the information coming out, quick, and it's really hard to explain to the average person that isn't really financial literate to begin with, this new wave of what's about to happen and how to prepare themselves. So, but yeah, thank you for again breaking that down and giving that information. And again, appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for answering our questions.
Hey Juan, this is Kalali Dobe. Thanks for coming on the show. I'm not in Florida. I'm actually in Prince Frederick, Maryland, Southern Maryland. But definitely, thanks for coming on the show and talking to us. Question I have for you, or a question I have for you is, I guess on a little bit of a more fundamental way, like how does the bank assess risk? Because okay, so let's suppose I have like a couple of business ideas. But I'm not sure if those ideas are going to pan out in profit like immediately. So if I'm presenting, my business proposal to the bank, how does the bank assess, the risk in terms of potentially lending me money for my business idea, knowing this? So if my business proposal says, hey, I'm not going to make profit probably for the next 3 to 5 years, what does that look like for the bank? And how can I help the bank with that risk assessment?
I get that question a lot, by the way. You're not alone. The way a bank assesses risk, especially in a situation that you're describing, based on your ideas, we want to know about your experience on it. I like to tell my team, we bank people, not companies. And what I mean by that, we bank the management teams. So if you come with your ideas and these are, maybe you have a lot of experience in the industry, and those ideas actually came out of that. Or you were working for somebody large enough and you were trying to implement that idea, right? And then you were successful, but you wanted to take it to another level. All this comes into fruition, right? Who are the people you have around you that is going to come with you to bring this idea to the table? The other thing is, how do you preparing this or proposing this idea? I will encourage you. There's plenty of resources that I was mentioning before. From economic development corporations, right? Get involved with them. And this is something that Ray, I know those as well. They know how to actually prepare a business plan, right? And usually they probably work with several banks, and every bank has a little different credit profile they're going to analyze. So based on your ideas, the type of information that you have, and your performance, there's some banks that are going to be more appealing than others, right? Some of them are going to take more risk, or maybe they have a concentration in the niche that you have, and they have a better understanding, i.e., what I mentioned about dentists and physicians and veterinarians. So that's one thing. I can tell you, though, if you have a business not going to be profitable in the next 3 to 5 years, that sounds to me is not a bank deal. And what I mean by that's more of an equity deal. Okay. So you need an investor. What happens with that, it dilutes your ownership, but it gives you the capital to start and invest on it. So when you actually become profitable, you're bankable, you can actually restructure your capital structure, right? And then potentially buying up some portion of your investors, right? That's why they're there. They're going to put in money at a higher risk, but they want a higher return. Banks, if you were listening before when I was talking about my analogy about looking at the way we analyze risk, so you're driving a car through your windshield and your rearview mirror. We always want to analyze historical performance. What we do with startups, yes. Again, so those are the case-by-case basis. I hope that helps you a little bit.
No, that does help me a lot actually, just in terms of looking at a couple of different ideas that I have. Another question that I have is also, so you talked about, you, I guess you talked about a lot about like product-based businesses. So what about service-based businesses? Is it the same kind of, are you, do you do the same kind of analysis with a service-based business, or is it different?
The same, but there's a mitigating factor there. So services actually is one of my favorite because margins are supposed to be better,
Right.
right? When you're providing a service. The weakness of it from a risk perspective is the lack of collateral. So you got to look at it the way actually a bank analyzes risk. I'm going to analyze your probability of paying my debt in the future. Right. And I do that through your financial analysis and cash flow. And then if that doesn't work out, what is my secondary source of repayment? Tends to be collateral. Could be inventory is one. That's receivables is another one. Right. Or it could be a combination. So when you're providing services, you're not going to have inventory, right? But chances are you're going to have receivables. Right. Right. So that's a collateral that the bank can say, hey, worst case scenario, how can we collect? And they usually would like to be within the assets. What I mean by that, Kalali, is like if I'm giving you $250,000, right, on a working capital facility, you have enough receivables to cover that. Usually our advance rate is about 80% of receivables, usually what we can collect, worst case scenario, right? Inventory about is about 50%. So our advance rate conservative. But services, again, is based on your margins, right? And you should be able also maximizing, optimizing your cash flow is critical also in the servicing business. Now, if you're the way you agree to your terms is another one we're going to analyze, right? So are you getting half of that up front, the other half upon completion? Upon completion is 90 days or 6 months. It's a big difference, right? So all these things you have to think in advance, and that's how we analyze that risk.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you very much. Like, I feel like we got a lot of information today that people pay for us. So I appreciate you.
Music to my ears.
Before the next question jumps in, I just wanted to piggyback off what Kalali was just saying, and when you were mentioning collateral, which is clearly important if you're doing service based as so my question real quick was, when it comes to collateral, do you guys use portfolios as collateral? You know, like stocks, you hold $100,000 worth of stocks in your portfolio. Can that be used as a collateral for the loan? And can you kind of like give us an example, I guess, walk us through that if possible?
Yeah, so obviously marketable securities are a strength and liquidity, right? Especially if you can liquidate them easy. So yeah, so when we look at a personal guarantor, right? I was referring before more of a what I call a corporate guarantor, right? The business. The owners, anybody who owns 20% or more, we usually can tie that as a personal guarantor, and they provide us additional strength, right, to mitigate the risk. And when we look at it, it's your liquidity. It could be in cash, it could be in marketable securities. That is basically an indication that you have additional cash that, if needed, you can liquidate it, right, and inject it to a business, bridge the gap, right, if needed. You can pledge that collateral. You can get loans. There's actually through one of our businesses, the wealth management side. We can actually provide you a margin loan, basically based on your marketable securities. You don't have to sell them. You can go at an average up to 40%, 50% of advance based on your marketable securities valuation. And then you just get a loan based on that. They're easy to get. I caution people around it. Only do it if you have a financial advisor, right? Because, you know, somebody actually analyzing the risk of your portfolio. Because if you take a big dip on that portfolio, then you get a margin call, and basically you have to liquidate the portfolio to repay the debt to be comfortable with it. So I caution that. But yeah, great question, right? There are products available, and also it's a strength from a credit perspective.
Excellent. Thank you, Juan. I appreciate that. And you said it was a margin, it was called a margin loan. Excellent.
So
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
in our firm, we call it loan management account.
Loan management account. All right. Excellent. Thanks again, sir.
That's what I'm talking about. Black Men Sundays. Juan Ammo, man. You enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays?
And having a great day. And having a great day, especially in a Sunday. I've been looking forward to this, Corey. So
Nice.
delighted to be here.
Yeah, man. And as I'm looking at your background outside of Bank of America, like I said, you're the member of the Small Business Advisory Board, Florida Chamber of Commerce. You're also on the executive board at the JA Academy, which teaches leadership and entrepreneurial skills. So, I'm starting to see that from a lot of like banking execs or just execs in general that they're also members on board. So talk about the importance of that, why you do that, and why, brothers listening should be a part of these boards.
Yeah, so multiple reasons, personal and also professionally. Personally, because I also want to feel integrated with the community and give back, because people help me along the way, and also support what we do in the communities we serve as a bank and organization. So top of mind, hunger, housing, and job creation are the paramount three pillars for Bank of America, and we do in the communities. So if you notice, the boards that we usually are engaged on, as executives, have something to do with it, or it could be something you're extremely passionate about. I'm passionate about early education, So that's why you see my commitment to the Junior Achievement Academy in Central Florida, now called 3DE. As an executive there, I want to make sure that internally in the institution, we create additional awareness, we support to volunteers hour, not only financially, but then we spread the word, right? About what we're trying to accomplish. I'm a firm believer, if you start early on with key education, it's going to just have massive, massive impact in the future. So going to the source of the issue, right, and addressing it from that, and then instead of putting patches when people are a lot older. The other aspect is we also try to work on organizations that are actually making a change, right, in the business community. Because I talked about, job creation is one. I used to be part of the Executive Council Committee at Prospera, which is actually an economic development corporation dedicated to the Hispanic entrepreneur. I'm also an executive board member of Team Volusia, which is basically the EDC in Volusia County. The more I get involved, the more I know what's happening in our community and what is needed, right? And then my job as an executive is going back to our institution and share the knowledge that I have. That's what we do. We get all together and talk about what we learn from our constituents and try to make sure that we are addressing the needs of every community we serve, right? It could be from, hey, do we have enough employees to serve these communities? Do we understand culturally that community, right? How do we serve it? What are the biggest demographics challenges in that community? How are we addressing it? So that's how we get to know this information, Corey. If you're not in these boards, how do we want to know?
I know I have to join join the African American Chamber of Commerce. And I definitely want to join the Florida Chamber of Commerce because, you know, as I'm hearing it's being repeated on this show, I'm like, oh, you're on that board. Oh, you're on that board. Oh, you're okay. Okay. So, I mean, there we go. The light bulb's been off, but, you know, a lot of people really are rocking now, man. So, hey, Juan Ammo, man, I appreciate you coming on Black Men Sundays, man. You dropped a lot of gems, a lot of information. So, but thanks for all your many blessings. Thanks for coming on the show, Juan. And enjoy your work week, man.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure getting to know you all. And thank you for the questions. Happy to be back at your convenience, Corey. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away.